What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Whether you're a duck or whether you're a beaver, your fantasy team needs a new receiver. It's Danny and Dusty at lunchtime every day. Maybe you're a tortured fan of Rip City. Danny and Dusty are here to take pity, hoping there's not a center with bad knees on the way. Talking noon till 3, Danny and Dusty on the Fan. Yep, I'm singing again, cause they haven't said I can't. Danny and Dusty love the teams the rest of us revile. Raising a Blazers banner would make it all worthwhile. Noon till 3.
An Odyssey station.
Hour number 3 here on Danny and Dusty on a Tuesday afternoon. When you're listening on 1080 AM, watching along on YouTube.com/1080AM or Twitch.tv/1080AM. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for hanging out with us on this wonderful, wonderful Tuesday.
Sup.
The final head coaching vacancy has been filled, as we talked about at open the show. Kellen Moore has taken the job with the New Orleans Saints, which puts a bow on this season's hiring cycle within the NFL. 7 jobs filled.
Yeah.
Coordinators yet to be sorted out all the way across the board, but the head jobs are all filled. How did these 7 teams do?
Kind of a mixed bag, right? I mean, I thought the Raiders did a really good job with getting Pete Carroll,
mm-hmm.
just because it's a culture reset. He's a culture builder. You're not in a window. And look, to be quite honest, how many of these teams are in a window to win right now? I think that the expectations are the Cowboys are, but they're not. Yeah. We know they're not.
The Bears
are closest.
Want to be?
They're the closest. But the fact that they are in a division with 3 legitimate playoff teams.
10 plus win teams.
Probably not. And then the Jets, by proxy of you have 1 good team in your division right now that you can lean on and you can say is a good team, and that's Buffalo, right? New England is still up in the air. I thought New England did a really good job with the hire of Mike Vrabel, but I've said this before. I think that the slippery slope with New England hiring Mike Vrabel, we know what Vrabel was in Tennessee, but if you want to sit there and lean on we're going to do it the Patriot way and have that, can go sideways on you real quick. But Vrabel has always carved his own path as a coach.
He's hard-nosed, tough. And we've talked about the whole idea of like the player's coach versus the hard-nosed coach and how successful the hard-nosed coaches have been in the NFL recently. Although Sirianni, not necessarily in that vein. He's more about water and the flowers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's not...
I think the interesting part of that is the Nick Sirianni isn't here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy where you're like, huh? You know?
Liam Cohen?
But Liam Cohen, his press conference was something.
Duval.
But Liam Cohen
started out just like Sirianni.
Is regarded as a really stinking good play caller.
Yeah,
Nick Sirianni was never a play caller.
No, you're
right? Fair. Like, if you look at this, Ben Johnson, elite play caller. Aaron Glenn, defensive coordinator mm-hmm. with a defense that was elite yep. in primo at the beginning of the year and ended up going in, I mean, winning games at the end of the year. We're like, how no is their defense doing
games.
This?
No business winning games.
Now, the wheels fell off and they gave up a 40 spot, damn near 50 in the yeah. divisional round, but he still did a really good job. Kellen Moore, kind of wunderkind play caller, has been a play caller for several years in the National Football League. Brian Schottenheimer, although he's a guy that was always a play caller that people said not head coach material, he has a very long history and track record of being a successful play caller in the NFL. Pete Carroll, head coach, Super Bowl winning head coach, one of the best, arguably the best head coach in football at any level, because he's won national titles mm-hmm. and he's won a Super Bowl.
It's a short list, right? Ladies and gentlemen.
Bill Belichick's like, I'm going to try and do that. Mm-hmm. Liam Cohen has been a play caller, albeit a very short time. He's like that fast riser, really good mm-hmm. football coach, X's and O's.
What we're talking about as far as like when you see a guy, you go yep. get him.
Mike Vrabel, successful head coach yes. in his own right in Tennessee, got a raw deal because he was too mean and intimidating for upper management to get along with. I can't.
The dumbest possible thing. Figure it out.
I can't.
You got to fire him because he's scaly.
Yeah. I can't. But we're winning and he's maximizing the
No.
Don't like it. Don't like it. He's the reason why our quarterback's up. No, he's not.
No,
he's not. So I think that if you look at it on the surface of that, and that's not to say that, you know, Nick Sirianni, obviously, really good hire, mm-hmm. right? But we also, you go back to Nick Sirianni, Remember Joe Judge?
Oh, yeah.
Remember Joe Judge? He fit that mold, too. He's a special teams coordinator, and they hired him away. They're like, hey, we're going to bring a little Patriot way here. He was an absolute disaster.
Indeed.
But all of these guys have shown that they've had chops of some sort. But when you're leading a team, that is completely different. And I think, like, if you want to sit there and say, you know, on the surface and only time will tell, because, like, people weren't high on Nick Sirianni.
No.
At the beginning. Time will tell, and the roster that these guys are given is the biggest indicator of their success.
Interesting thing about this. You have five first-timers.
Yeah.
The two rehires in Pete and Vrabel.
Mm-hmm.
Would you consider those guys retread coaches? Because I don't look at either of them as retreads.
Pete, no. Pete is not like your quintessential retread.
No.
But you could make the argument of Vrabel because... isn't there, right? But nobody thought that he was fired truly because
for
of cause.
that's what I mean. Like, right? He wasn't a bad coach.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Retread coaches are coaches that it's the Jeff Fisher line, like, you know, the 7-9s, the 8-8s, or now, you know, 9-8s.
But, and they just guys that just keep getting jobs over and over again. I think that may be gone in the NFL mm-hmm. because I think one of the styles of the NFL hiring system now is you get fired, that's kind of it, and your lot in life may be a coordinator moving forward. And there's nothing wrong with that, the way that coordinators are getting paid.
No, God, no. Who got it the most right?
I think the Bears did, just because they got the young, hot play caller. But again, like, I have my worries about that hire. He will not have arguably the best offensive line in football.
Mm-hmm.
He had that in Detroit. Yeah.
It makes being the gadget guy a lot easier when all your gadgets are the best on the table.
Every play caller looks great when your offensive line is elite.
Mm-hmm.
They are a far cry from an elite offensive line. But he is a guy that...
Perfect example. Andy Reid did not look great in the Super Bowl.
He's got because your offensive line, not good, right?
Yeah.
He has got all of the makings of a guy that can be a very successful head coach, though. If you have a playbook that is, you know, 500 pages and it looks like the Art of War, you know, it's not going to do you any good if nobody can block.
No.
And that is number one. And this goes back to...
Like warfare, trenches matter.
All of these guys, yes, World War I especially, mm-hmm. All of these guys, their success is dependent on the roster that they're given. In Chicago, they've got to get better up front. And that's not even a question right now. They have to get better up front.
Yeah. Is Schottenheimer the worst hire? I hate to pile on the Cowboys. I don't. I don't even why I prefaced it that way.
No.
On the Cowboys.
It's a very unserious organization that hired him.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say it's the worst hire because, like, any one of these guys could end up being that. I think that Kellen Moore is a gamble, but the idea that the Saints were desperate and just because they were the last team to hire mm-hmm. means they didn't know what way they were going to go. No, they knew it was going to be Kellen Moore.
Kellen was the guy they flagged like almost 2 months ago.
And they could not hire him because, I don't know, winning. He won a Super Bowl,
yeah.
right? So, but
the Super Bowl winning offensive coordinator is not the bottom of the barrel.
The roster that they have currently is not good enough to win.
Oof, God, no.
But they will be competitive. And so they've got some hell that they need to get through. And for guys like some of these guys, Kellen Moore, Aaron Glenn, Pete Carroll, their success is going to not be this year. It's going to be 2-3 years down the road if Pete Carroll is still around.
Yeah, what's going to be interesting is like what coordinators ultimately get hired. And the mm-hmm. Raiders, I'll make no bones about it. Hiring Chip Kelly as the offensive coordinator, that's a good move.
It's a good move. His offenses were always productive. In
always.
Philly, we went through this. I think he had like, in two seasons, he had like the third and fifth best yeah. offenses in the NFL. It was him controlling an NFL locker room where that went completely sideways and out the door.
And we've been around Chip a little bit over the last couple of years. We've talked to him. I think he's matured and changed and understands things a lot better in that aspect now. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't, he's a coordinator. He's not the head coach. Mm-hmm. You've got Pete there, the ultimate vibes guy to kind of smooth things over.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to kind of see what coordinators start filling out and how things fit together and ultimately what kind of comes out of this.
I will be interested to see if Kellen Moore comes out and is like, I will definitively be the play caller as well.
Do you keep that in your back pocket as something to go to?
Yeah.
It sucks that you have to be so strategic about that. But if you're the play caller right out of the gate, it's on you.
But you have to make nails hires mm-hmm. across the board for every guy that is going to be, and it's not just your position coaches, it's the guy who's going to be in your headset with game management stuff. It's going to be the guy who is telling you, you know, situationally mm-hmm. what is happening, and a guy that you can trust and you know he is the person. And his first hire being Brandon Staley with game management, probably not the guy that is the biggest ringing endorsement,
no.
but Brandon Staley as D coordinator was really damn mm-hmm. good. Kellen Moore is going to have somebody who's not a coordinator that's just in the booth, in his ear, giving him all that information to whether you go for it on fourth down, what are we going to challenge, how many timeouts, situationally, are we going to go for the 2-for-1, you know, all of those things. You have to be able to lean on that guy if you are going to be the play caller, because you have so many other things that you're trying to process from one play to the next.
Well, speaking of those position coaches.
And that goes with Ben Johnson, too.
Oh, yeah,
right?
100%.
Yeah.
Speaking of those position coaches and those Dallas Cowboys, they have reached into the backyard of Oregon and plucked away
Ooh.
Junior Adams to be their next wide receiver coach. How big of a loss is this for the Ducks? We'll get to that more coming up here on Danny Dusty, Danny the Fan.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 3-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the Oregon Ducks have been wildly productive on the field, and a big part of that, obviously, is the coaches that they've brought in over the last 3 years with Dan Lanning and crew. And whether it's been Dillingham going out, the running back coach,
Carlos Lachlan,
to Ohio State last
yep.
year, like this Oregon staff has been poached because they've brought in a lot of good guys. And one of the guys that has been a recruiting dog for the Oregon Ducks has been Junior Adams. He has been a recruiter and a developer of talent. We were talking off air about the guys that he has been part of bringing in and developing, and it is a list.
Yeah, if you go down the list of guys that Junior Adams has recruited as the primary recruiter, I mean, it's pretty impressive historically, like guys that he has recruited. Yes. And that's talent evaluation. And then also, you know, talent development, once you get guys there, mm-hmm. include Cooper Kupp.
Pretty good.
Puka Nacua.
Pretty good.
Roma Dunze.
Pretty good.
Jalen McMillan.
Pretty good.
Right? You go down all of the people that he was the primary recruiter for that Oregon has now on on roster, whether it's DeCorian Moore, who is one of the top receiver recruits in the country, the top receiver recruit in the country. He has had his hand, and then just talk about development, maximizing guys, right? I think most people saw Adunze and McMillan pop when he was gone.
Yeah.
Right? But he was the primary. Puka Nacua ended up transferring to BYU. But that's the talent evaluation, eye for talent. Right?
When you see hundreds of high school kids who are all good, great, what makes them stand out?
Right.
And truly understanding the differences and the paths that they can take.
And not all of those guys were the five-star flashy recruits,
I mean,
right?
You got two guys from Eastern Washington there.
Well, one is. Puka went to UW.
Yeah.
But and then transferred to BYU. But what he has done from a development standpoint, Tez Johnson was a guy that he transferred from Troy to Oregon, mm-hmm. and he was not the Tez Johnson that we know at Oregon. He had some big time plays that he could make. We knew that he had speed. You could see that, and that was apparent. But you saw him maximize Tez. You saw him maximize guys like Troy Franklin and develop and actually see those guys grow over their time with Junior Adams. He is a very good coach, and he's not just a recruiter. No. He's a developer too. And I think eye for talent and then being a guy that can recruit and close, those are very important things. And so if the reports are true, he does go to the Dallas Cowboys to be part of Brian Schottenheimer's staff. Mm-hmm. On the surface, that is a blow. What Dan Lanning has done, though, in getting hires, he goes, you know, lose secondary coach after year one, goes and gets Chris Hampton from Tulane, right? Chris Hampton is a dead-eye, mm-hmm. he's dyed-in-the-wool football guy, great in the back end and coaching guys up. He's the defensive coordinator who's mm-hmm. like, yeah, I'll be a co-DC and handle the back end of Oregon's defense. He goes and he gets Rashad Samples this past year. Instrumental in not just he's a young coach who is really damn good, but is also a really good recruiter mm-hmm. for as young as he is. Guy was being floated out there as a potential head coaching candidate for Sam Houston State, or I guess it's just Sam Houston University. Yeah. And he's young. His Sample's dad comes from a coaching family. Dad is the head coach at Duncanville mm-hmm. High School.
A powerhouse
where DeCorian Moore went to high school as well. So he has gotten guys. Will Stein, after Kenny Dillingham, goes to University of Texas San Antonio, says, got a young
play
caller.
This is the kicker here. He's not going and taking from Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia. He's finding, much like the NFL, the risers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting, because Dan's young. So he's connected with the risers, and like he's a riser himself. Like, and I think that those are the guys he goes and gets,
yeah.
guys that kind of emulate him. And the single biggest reason that I have shifted my tune on what Oregon can be is Dan Lanning,
mm-hmm.
and it's not just him; it's the entirety of Dan Lanning, which is his staff and who he brings in when he loses somebody. Because it is the recruiting. It is the development. It's the whole ethos has changed.
Yep.
And like losing Junior Adams, it's going to be a blow. There's no doubt about that. But if you're an Oregon fan, you should have faith that they're going to be able to get somebody in there who's going to be a dude.
And this will be really interesting to see kind of the direction that they do go. Do they go and try to pluck a guy out of, you know, a standing power conference and say, you know, we'll give you a pay bump. We know what you can do. We know you're really good. You know, I know that, you know, LSU's receivers coach was floated out in an article. I think Zachary Neal had saying, do you go and just go big game hunting? A school that goes out and...
Do they do well with wide receivers at LSU?
Yeah, they recruit and they develop them pretty dang well. But, you know, that's the thing is that they went to Tulane, Texas, San Antonio, and I can't remember where samples came from. Texline will get us on that. But it wasn't, he's not a guy that was one of those big school, power four position coaches. It is a riser, and recruiting is going to be important. But talent development, especially with that room that they have of wide receivers now, it's going to be pretty dang good. Now, they lost a lot. When you lose guys like Trayshon Holden and you lose Tez Johnson, that is a big blow. But you have a stockpile of young guys in that receiver room that are pretty damn impressive. And so you've got to knock this hire out of the park, too. It'll be interesting.
Rashad Samples, student assistant at Houston, then assistant receivers coach at Texas, offensive assistant at SMU, followed by a stint as running backs coach and recruiting coordinator, and assistant head coach and running backs coach, then on to the Rams, Arizona State, and Oregon.
Yep, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah, went down to Dillingham.
There you go.
Went down to ASU and got him.
Which,
yep.
There's those ties.
So... It is going to be a big hire. And Junior Adams, dude, his players freaking loved him. Very similar to Carlos Lachlan, who went over to Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Like, that was one that, like, all of the running backs were like, dude, we love Coach Lock. Well, Rashad Samples came in, and he acclimated himself really well to that room. And you hear about, you know, what we saw at the beginning of the year from Jordan James and Noah Whittington to what we saw at the end of the year from those guys. It clicked, and they were different backs near the end of the year. And so he built up that trust and got that faith in them really quickly. Lanning has done a good job with his hire so far.
Yeah, so, and again, I think if you're an Oregon fan, that's why you have faith in where they go next.
Yep.
Coming up next here on Danny and Dusty, pivot back to the NFL. The Super Bowl's over, but the offseason is officially getting underway. Trade requests, quarterbacks changing spots, and maybe take a look forward to some NFL draft news and notes. Coming up here next, but first, here's a big Kuno Sports Center update.
I hear they got some tasty burgers.
There's still time to enter daily for the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. Entering is easy. Just download the Fan Odyssey app, log and listen to 1080 The Fan or any participating station. Listen each day for a minimum of 1 hour for your daily entry. The winner of this national contest will receive Travel 4. That's the winner and three guests in a 5-night hotel stay at Circa Resort and Casino, Las Vegas' premium sports viewing destination and home of the biggest March Hoops party at Stadium Swim. I popped in there at night. I didn't get to go to Stadium Swim because it was very late, but I got to kind of walk by there. I was like, ooh, that looks pretty cool. Plus $5,000 for each of you to fund the ultimate viewing experience for the first two rounds of the college basketball championships. Come back each day and listen for another hour to add in the chance to win. For more info, go to 1080thefan.com. Jealous of whoever wins that. That's such a rad sweepstakes.
Yeah, it is. Like, it is.
Like, I'm not contractually obligated to say that, but like,
I would want to go.
I would want to go have a fully paid for 5-night stay at Circa
with friends
to watch that tournament.
Yeah,
with cash.
Let's go.
That's dangerous.
Go down there with $5,000, leave with 25
in debt.
No, man, $25.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Keeping it local, switching from Oregon to Oregon State. There's some news coming out of Corvallis.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's kind of these little waves of news coming out. And Nick Daschle, Oregonian, he had this little story that I thought was pretty interesting yesterday. He said, starting next fall, Oregon State is going to be adding a fee to aid the revenue sharing efforts with student athletes as part of the house settlement.
And this is happening around the country.
Everywhere. This is going to be the norm. This is going to be the norm. But this is where I think that the uncertainty and unfamiliarity, it's coming with like mixed reviews, right? When you're at a program like Oregon, which is in the Big Ten and is coming off a very successful season, right? Ticket prices going up. That makes sense. But I think it came with a little bit of, hey, well, wait a minute here. You know, why are we getting hit with a more expensive ticket? It's not really that much. I saw that, you know, a couple of the folks that were replying to Dasher were like, hey, pump the brakes on this. Like he said that one guy said it was only $21 per seat for his season tickets for the season.
Yeah.
Not $21 per game per seat. It was just like $21 per seat for the entire
year. How many home games they have this year?
The Beavs?
Yeah.
They have got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They got 7 home games this year.
So less than $3 per game.
Oh, when you put it that way, that's pretty good.
That's nothing.
Yeah. I'm not, and again, that's just somebody replying on Twitter. So I don't know if that is, or where the seats are.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if they're, the highfalutin seats, it's a little bit different.
Is it a percentage? Is it a flat rate? Whatever it was. There was one of the top 10 teams that talked about, I remember this, I can't remember who it was. They had like a 10%.
We were talking about this. I want to say it was
Ohio maybe, State or Penn State.
LSU maybe. One of them did. It was or Texas, but it was a big jump, and yeah. It's like whoa.
It was 10% wherever you sat, kind of a deal. I was like, that's not a small hike.
It's gonna be the cost of doing business and playing big boy football, though, and with Oregon State. They're going to not stick it to their fans. I mean, if there's one athletic department in the country that has actually been doing right by their fans, it's the Beavs, and they're trying, man, right? Like, they're not going to rake you over the coals just to make a buck. This is going to be going back to, you know, that revenue share. And if you want to be able to be part of the schools that are continuing to recruit FBS level talent, mm-hmm. that's what you're going to have to do. And they just spent
all that money on Reser.
Mostly the positive reaction from fans is reassuring them,
yeah.
Because that's the way it should be with Oregon State is that, look, we're going to be committed.
If you're in, you're in.
To getting out of this independence, rebuilding the Pac-12, and moving forward as a viable football program. Hell yeah, go do that.
You've got to have the life raft continue.
Look, the House settlement is going to change a lot in the world of college athletics. Not just college football, not just basketball. It's across the board, massive ramifications. Landscape shifter. And you've got to be able to position yourself to be viable when all of these changes happen. It's not a big change, man. I think it's something that makes sense. Makes sense for fans. It makes sense for your athletic department. And look, it's going
to
be...
The problem it gets to is when you start pricing people out of stuff. And that's always the worry. Because like even... let's be blunt. The Blazers are not a good basketball team right now. You can get tickets to game very inexpensively.
Yeah.
Now, you can't get a premium courtside seat inexpensively.
Yeah.
No matter who you're playing.
Yeah.
But you can still get in the building.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get in the building in the 200 level for a relatively decent gate on a non-Laker game.
Those Laker fans, they do it to us all the time.
Look, man, my family had season tickets when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And I'll make no bones about it. We sold 2 pairs of Laker tickets every year when they were in the Pacific Division. And literally 4 tickets would pay for our season tickets.
Well, hey, look at that. Look at that.
I get it. And people are like, you can't do that. Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can. When you don't have a bunch of money, yeah, you can.
What I thought was interesting, though, was I was encouraged by the reaction to a very small price increase on season tickets.
Yeah.
I was encouraged by that based on, like, the reaction that Dashiell got on social media about Oregon and Oregon State in the future of their football series. Mm-hmm. And fans were like, don't play them. But there were so many fans that were like, there's no need to play Oregon anymore. Would never want to play them again. And he brought up the fact that, look, if that's the road that you want to go down, you want to be a Power 4 team, you got to play Oregon because they're in your state. It's not a big travel expense. You're not going to have to pay them an exorbitant amount of money to keep this thing alive.
Go 25 minutes away.
Yep. And it's a rivalry game. And people are like, nope, never want to play them again. And he brought up the point like, dude, how many Power 4 schools have come and played at Reser that have been like ranked and good?
Yeah.
And he brought up Wisconsin, the 2012 game. where they beat, they had a home and home Wisconsin. They were, nobody was giving them a shot to beat Wisconsin. They did it.
Mm-hmm.
They beat Wisconsin in that game in 2012. I went back and I looked at every non-conference game. I went back to World War II.
I was wondering what you were doing over there.
I went back to World War II, and I went every single non-conference game against a ranked opponent,
mm-hmm.
power conference or not.
So basically in the last 80 years, what'd you come up with?
11 times since the last one was 1948.
Holy crap.
Like it's, and that's the thing is that it's hard. It's always been hard for schools out West to get the Power Four schools to come out here and play.
I mean, wasn't that a big part of like Boise State coming to Oregon?
But that
because they were a national, like they had risen to power a couple years before against Oklahoma in the bowl game, and isn't that where that came out of?
And so this is like to get ranked teams, and those are ranked non conference teams mm-hmm. to come out here. So a quality opponent, right? Yeah. And this year they're going to dabble with like Wake Forest, right? Does Wake Forest move the needle as a home game for people?
Of basketball.
Sure. Basketball. Is Chris Paul and Tim Duncan going to take the floor for him?
Or Jeff Teague action?
Probably not.
Yeah.
So of ranked opponents that are non-conference games, only 11 have come.
In 80 years.
Four of them were played in Portland. In the 70s, they played Arizona State before they were a member of the Pac-10. Twice in Portland. They played West Virginia in 1962 and Syracuse in 1961. In Portland. And if you look at where a majority of these games have come from, they are pre Pac-10 expansion.
Yeah.
So you want to go back to since 1977 when Arizona State joined the Pac-10. Okay. Four. And that includes Oregon last year. And that's just a ranked opponent coming out West to play Oregon State. It's Oregon, Wisconsin in 2012. Mm-hmm. With Cincinnati in 2009,
okay,
and BYU in 1977. Those are the only ranked non-conference
and BYU's
opponents.
At least mildly regional.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like as far as like the West Coast general mountain area is concerned, that's not a hike.
So like it is a quality opponent. It's a power conference opponent, and like. I thought it was really smart to pivot and get Wake Forest on the schedule this mm-hmm. past year. Like that was
what you got to do.
Smart pivot, get Power Four schools. But if you those ones that move the needle, they're the ranked opponents, yeah. right? And those ones don't come out where those are your proving grounds. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that you go and you can make a statement with your program. Beating up on, you know, a Wake Forest or getting Northwestern to come out or getting, you know, a bottom feeder from the Big 12 or the ACC to mm-hmm. come out. Like, that won't, Vanderbilt isn't going to move the needle for your fan base. And it's not going to establish you as like a legitimate, hey, yeah. we deserve that seat at the table. That's what Boise State did. And this may be where Oregon State needs to do it. And this is what they did with DeAndros, right? Is they used to go on the road and they would go, they'd say, let's go. We're going to Purdue to play Bob Greasy.
We'll come say,
we're
we'll
going to go to Michigan State mm-hmm. three times for you guys to come back once, yeah. right? Like that was how, that's how you make yourself viable,
yeah.
right? And you're going to get a little bit of money.
You take all comers, and if you go in there and you, hell, if you just acquit yourself, it's good for you. But when you do steal those and you do build, that's when you make your hay.
But if you want to get a ranked opponent to do that, the risk is not there.
No, and you got to pay the freight to do it. It's just, you know.
And so I understand that, you know, being like, most of the years they're going to crush us. I understand that. I get that. That would be a tough pill to swallow. But you catch them on the chin, how good does that feel? Right?
Yep.
And like, you're not going to get ranked teams to sign these home and home agreements because what a lot of the power, take a page out of the SEC's playbook where they just go, yeah, we'll come play you. You got to come here first. And then they never show up. Yeah. They buy themselves out of that deal and say, yeah, go find somebody else to play.
But that's also another way to put a little bit more money in your coffers.
Sure. Yeah.
You go there and you play them, and then they buy you out of it, and you figure it out from there.
Yeah. As this text on the Vancouver Four text line, if it's only 11 times since World War II, doesn't that prove that they do not need to go play Oregon?
Oregon's in the conference.
They were, Oregon State at the time was in the Pac-10. Yeah,
it's not a non-conference.
In the Pacific Coast Conference, yes. If you go that far back, Pac-8, Pac-10, Pac-12. Yeah. You know, it's always, the point is, it's always been hard to get teams to come out west that are good ranked opponents. Yeah. And that, it's going to be even harder when they're like, oh, that's why people were surprised. Like when Oregon and Oregon State said, yeah, we'll go to Boise State. You know, we'll go to Fresno State. Like people were surprised. Like you don't need to do that,
but that's the way it's got to go now. So.
Yeah, take all comers, baby. Let's go.
All right, come up next to put a nice little bow on today's show with some NFL news and notes. Come here, Dan Dusty, Tenney the Fan. It's official. DeAndre Ayton is going to be out tomorrow for the Portland Trail Blazers. We do not have the medicals, but he is indeed going to be out. Scoot Henderson also out. Questionable for tomorrow. Jeremy Grant, Chris Murray, and Robert Williams.
That one with Scoot is probably a little bit more noteworthy.
I think it's a preemptive.
Just the way that DeAndre went down, you're like 7-footer, helped off the floor, grabbed his calf, no contact.
Can't
you're like,
put weight on it. Yeah.
We've seen guys roll their ankle quite often and, you know, a couple days off, they're good to go. Scoot going down the way he did, as you mentioned, he grabbed at that foot and was like clasping.
Yeah. He did. He did very normal or classical, like you said, like, this isn't good. I think there's the one that's, you know, precautionary, get him another day off. But also, is he going to play in the Rising Stars game now? Remember last year, he ended up rolling his ankle at the event, and he ended up missing some time coming back. I think this is a situation where you probably see him shut down if it's anything more than like a day-to-day thing.
Yeah.
I don't think he participates now.
All right.
It's a bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
But we do not have official word on DeAndre Ayton yet, but he is indeed out, and I would expect that he's probably out for, if not the season, but out for a sustained period of time.
Do you want to watch a college basketball game get sideways tonight? UConn goes to Creighton.
Oh, yeah.
And Creighton has upped the ante. Creighton will have a rally towel on every seat.
Mm.
Red Panda is the halftime show.
Goat.
And they do it once a year, and they've picked defending national champs, UConn coming to Omaha, dollar beer night.
Get loose.
Remember, Dan Hurley last year after Creighton upset UConn with a fan when he did the, I'll knock you out!
Mm-hmm.
Now on dollar beer night.
Let's get loose.
It's going to get wild in Omaha. All right, up next, you got 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Prime time with Isaac Souk. Have a great Tuesday, everybody. We'll see you Wednesday from noon to three right here on The Fan.
Bye.